Good evening, Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is the first day of March 2024. We're going to be doing Chapter 3 on the plasmalogens. Now, we were deep into a discussion of biosynthesis of these lipids, and I want to summarize that because the next set of details we're going to get into are associated with the regulation of that pathway, which involves a great deal of subcellular translocation of lipids and polypeptides. Hence, it's another good reason to make this a mosaic, right? Now, okay, quickly. Ether lipids, of course, are going to be synthesized from the peroxisome to the ER. Remember, the peroxisomal component has to do with this acyl dihydroxyacetone pathway because, remember, DHAP, the glycolytic intermediate, is going to be the precursor rather than glycerol 3-phosphate for the ether lipid biosynthesis. Of course, the fatty acids, as we've been telling you, probably come directly from fatty acid synthase or from that initial elongation desaturation, since those are the three fatty acids you find, namely palmitate, stearate, oleate. So what else we want to say about that? The fatty acids, once they're removed from the FAS, or if they are translocated in, let's say, from a lipoprotein, depending on where these plasmalogens are being synthesized, what cell, what tissue, fatty acid has to be activated to a fatty acyl CoA. So that means a component is going to be an acyl-CoA synthetase. And that enzyme, a specific isoform of it, is found in the peroxisomal membrane. Now we'll get into the more frank reactions. Okay, once again, I know we've kind of blew through these, but I want to make sure you get them in your mind. Glycerone phosphate O acyl transferase, that's GNPAT. Again, a peroxisomal protein, but it's in the matrix of the peroxisome. And it will use those long chain acyl CoAs to acylate the dihydroxyacetone phosphate at that one position. So you have a fatty acid there, the beginning. The next peroxisomal step is catalyzed by alkyl glycerone phosphate synthase. That's known as AGPS. And that results in the formation of the ether bond at the one position because it exchanges a fatty acid for a fatty alcohol, or if you like, acyl chain for an alkyl chain. So the alkyl moiety used for that transferase enzyme, okay, otherwise known as alkyl glycerone phosphate synthase, is produced by a peroxisomal membrane-associated fatty acyl-CoA reductase. Remember, those are either isoforms FAR1 or 2, and they simply reduce a fatty acyl-CoA to a fatty alcohol. And then that last peroxisomal step is carried out by an acyl-alkyl DHAP reductase. And of course, that's going to reduce the alkyl DHAP into the ether lipid precursor, which will now be 1-O-alkylglycerol-3-phosphate. Okay, so you've reduced that ketone to an alcohol on the glycerol backbone. Now, the DAP reductase can also reduce acyl DAP to generate diacyl phospholipid precursors, such as lysophosphatidic acid. And that's actually an alternate to just simply the direct acylation of glycerol 3-phosphate by the G3P acyl transferase, otherwise known as GPAT. We talked about that in previous lectures. Now, other steps to consider to convert either the AGP or the LPA to the corresponding ether-linked diacyl glycerol lipids, such as phosphatidylcholine or phosphatethanolamine, are all going to take place in the ER. So you have a tethering the peroxisome to the ER. Remember, I told you about this. And that completes this plasmalogen biosynthesis. So you have a peroxisomal protein acyl-CoA binding domain 5. Remember that? And that was bound in association with a VAMP protein AB. Those are the VAP-A, VAP-B. And those are ER-resident proteins that recruit the peroxisome organelle to the ER. Okay? This is more or less review. Now, remember that plasmalogens are just simply a type of glycerol phospholipid. And the big deal difference is that the plasmalogen sensu stricto has a vinyl ether linkage at the one position. And again, plasmalogens are major constituents of cellular membranes, and they're generated via the de novo biosynthesis pathway rather than via dietary intake. Okay? Synthesis of these plasmalogens, of course, as we just said, involves the peroxisome of the ER. And for the formation of that vinyl ether, remember that's going to put in a double bond, that's going to be catalyzed by another enzyme. That's going to be called plasmanyl ethanolamine desaturase. Because it's going to put a double bond, generating a vinyl group, right? Of course. Okay, from the alkyl now, just a simple alkyl, you're going to make a vinyl group because you're going to desaturate that carbon. Okay, so plasmalogen deficiencies have been reported in infants with a rare disease called rhizomelic chondrodysplasia punctata, otherwise known as RCDP. And that's in a larger group of disorders, which are simply called PBDs. And you can guess what those are, peroxisome biogenesis disorders. So that RCDP is associated with a genetic mutation. And that mutation is going to be specifically in plasmalogen biosynthesis. And also perhaps that interaction between the peroxisome and the ER. Okay. So the transporter systems for proteins to the peroxisome are going to need a type 2 peroxisomal targeting signal. That's going to be a signal peptide on the amino terminus of the enzymes that are trafficked to the peroxisome. So that signal peptide has a, again, an acronym, PTS2. So type 2 peroxisomal targeting signal, PTS2, is one of two still distinct peptide motifs, which will allow soluble proteins to enter the peroxisome. So they're going to be ribosomally translated in the cytoplasm, and then they're going to be trafficked to the peroxisome. So they're going to need a single peptide. A single peptide will act as an amphiphilic alpha helix, and that will expose the side chains of all the conserved residue of all those residues to one specific side of that helix, okay, because it's amphiphilic. So the PTS2 motifs are recognized by a specific bipartite protein complex, which consists of a receptor called PEX7 for peroxisome 7, and yet another co-receptor. So any cargo-laden receptor complexes are translocated across that peroxisomal membrane by what's now going to be a transient pore. And that's going to be, that pore will be within the peroxisomal membrane. And that will cargo polypeptides. And then they'll be released, and sometimes they have to be processed by removing the transient peptide. But not all the proteins get completely processed that way. So it's not like the ER translocation system, if you recall that from lectures, just from general biochemistry, probably from a year or more ago when we were talking about ER translocation of polypeptides, and often chaperone into the ER, by the way. Now, the components of the bipartite receptor are then re-exported, of course, into the cytoplasm. And that's done by a ubiquitin-mediated ATP hydrolysis-driven export mechanism. So this PTS2 motif resembles a lot of other amino terminal targeting signals, whereas the functional relation to that being a second peroxisomal targeting signal from PTS1 as opposed to PTS2 is going to be linking up to how PTS1 and PTS2 deliver the protein, either to the membrane or to the lumen of the peroxisome. Okay. And it seems like the disease, rhizomelic chondrodysplasia punctata, is associated with corruptions of that PTS2 signal peptide. Okay. When we look at which of the proteins seem to be deficient in those people with that disease. Okay. So there actually are a total of 5 genetic mutations in RCDP. RCDP1 is the most common, and it's caused simply by a mutation in the PEX7, that's the receptor gene. And that, as I said, it codes for the PEX7 receptor, which is essential for the import of, remember, which enzyme? The alkyl glycerone phosphate synthase. That's the AGPS, which has to go into the peroxisomal matrix, or lumen if you want. Okay. Now, RCDP 2, 3, and 4 are caused directly by mutations in enzymes. Enzymes like glycerone phosphate O-acyltransferase, that's the GNPAT, the AGPS itself that's restricted, or the fatty alcohol reductase 1, FAR. So those are going to link up to RCDP 2, 3, and 4 for that particular pathogenotype for that disorder. Okay, so those are directly associated with synthesis of the plasmalogens, as you can see. Now, remember that glycerone phosphate O-acyltransferase, GNPAT, is the peroxisomal matrix protein, and it will use long-chain acyl-CoA simply to just acylate DHAP at that one position, right? So we are now back essentially to where we were before, I think. So those peroxisomal matrix enzymes, GNPAT and AGPS, sequentially catalyze the synthesis of acyl-DAP and alkyl-DAP, respectively, right? Whereas the AGPS itself catalyzes the formation of alkyl-DHAP because it replaces the fatty acid acyl chain of acyl-DHAP with the long chain alcohol generated by the FAR1. Now, the FAR1 is a peroxisomal carboxy tail anchored protein. And as I've been saying, it reduces fatty acids to long chain alcohols, right? So the alkyl DHAP then has to be reduced to alkyl glycerol 3-phosphate. Alkyl G3P, right? And then it's further going to be metabolized to plasmalogens via the remaining 4 steps that are all localized in the endoplasmic reticulum, right? And the final step for the synthesis of phosphatidylethanolamine, or that is prostaglandin ethanolamine, is going to be catalyzed by the, we already mentioned it, plasmanyl, MANYL ethanolamine desaturase 1. That's the PEDS1 enzyme. And that enzyme, of course, is going to desaturate, right? It's going to require molecular oxygen and a cytochrome B5. So what's the process? Plasmalogens are transported to the post-Golgi. And that includes some endosomes and the plasma membrane, because that's post-Golgi, right? And that requires ATP. And I told you at the beginning of these lectures, that is not a vesicular transport, nor is it a membrane lipid raft transport. Now, in the plasma membrane, plasmalogens are preferentially located to the inner leaflet in a manner that is dependent on a P4 type ATPase, and that's called ATP 8-beta-2. Now, that ATPase associates with a protein on the membrane called CDC50. It's a subunit of the enzyme. So plasmalogens localized to the inner leaflet of the plasma membrane are then sensed by the cell. And the signal monitoring the cellular level of plasmalogens has to be conveyed then to the peroxisome, where the stability of the fatty acid reductase 1 is ultimately regulated. And that will control the synthesis then of the plasmalogens, because that's going to be essentially the rate limiting step. So the plasmalogens in the inner leaflet of the membrane, plasma membrane, contribute to the 3-phosphoinositide-dependent protein kinase, 1-mediated phosphorylation of AKT. Remember this? And that participates, of course, in cell proliferation, activation of AKT downstream proteins. Now, this is how plasmalogens are going to be linked up with certain cancers. Okay? Now, something to keep in mind, this ATPase associated with CDC50 is functioning as a flipase, moving that plasmalogen between the inner leaflet and the outer leaflet of the plasma membrane. And that when the plasmalogen is localized to the inner leaflet, that signals to the fatty acid reductase 1 at the ER, which is going to generate then ultimately the alkyl dihydroxyacetone phosphate. You see how that works? And that's all at the peroxisome, and the peroxisome will then deliver plasmalogen ethanolamine to the ER. And then that will be the final step through the Golgi, extra Golgi, to making it to the plasma membrane. Okay. So hopefully it's not confusing, because there are multiple steps here. I know it would be better if I was doing this with the video lecture. I know I keep on saying that. I am going to go back and do video lectures. I promise that. But when I do, I'm going to go onto a completely new platform. So I've been working on this new platform. It's where I'm going to be able to generate video lectures for both the podcast and for just regular production of videos, which could go on maybe even go back on YouTube, right? So this rhizomelic chondrodysplasia, punctata, the RCDP, is an autosomal recessive phenotype. And it comprises a complementation group 11 of the peroxisome biogenesis disorders. Okay. And initially, PEX7 was the candidate gene for this disorder because it links up to its conformer in yeast, because it functions as a receptor for peroxisomal matrix polypeptides. And that's the whole thing I just went through with the type 2 peroxisomal targeting signal. Okay, so I'm not going to give you much more detail about that genetic disorder. A lot is known about it. It deals with PEX7 mutations, as we were mentioning. And we may go back to that, because I did write into my lecture a great deal of discrete information about the disease. But I'm going to move on, because I feel like we We've spent enough time on just generating the synthesis of the plasmalogen. I will say that mutations that result in a severely reduced ability for plasmalogen synthesis does imply directly that de novo plasmalogenesis is essential for human health, because there are these diseases that are linked to it, which are quite highly morbid and can be lethal in infants that have these various mutations, right? And there's a recent occurrence in the literature that shows that a group of patients with elevated plasmalogen levels in early childhood can be due to a genetic disorder that's called spastic paraplegia. And that also demonstrates why plasmalogen, not so much deficiency here, but plasmalogen homeostasis is very critical for normal human development and good human health. Okay, so where we're at now in 2024 is that plasmalogen homeostasis is absolutely significant to normal human physiology. So this is a rare lipid, but you heard me mention it many times, I think, in the last several mosaic, in the first mosaic, and then several of those biomedical portraits. The reason I kept on mentioning and plasmalogens is because this is a very unique form of a phosphoglycerol lipid in the membrane. But it, because it is unique, it's directly linked to a host of essential physiological and biochemical processes, only one of which I just alluded to was that AKT pathway, right? This is where lipids become critical in your understanding of cell biology and then linked to overall human biology, right? So tissue-specific conditional KOs in mice showing a defect in plasmalogen synthesis within any one of those various genes that code for those enzymes in the pathway are all linked up to impaired peroxisomal biogenesis corruption. So the synthesis of plasmalogens isn't just involved because it occurs in the peroxisome. When plasmalogen biosynthesis is corrupted via mutation, peroxisomal biogenesis is also corrupted. Okay? So that means there's a direct link with plasmalogen biosynthesis and peroxisomal biogenesis homeostasis. And that has been discovered in these animal studies, these KO studies, in the cerebrum, skeletal muscle, heart, and adipose tissue. And the research continues, right, with these knockouts. So you can see how absolutely essential plasmalogens are, okay? So, again, patients with that RCDP or in another whole host of diseases, which are simply just peroxisomal deficiencies, seem to be linked to reductions or excessive levels of plasmalogens. And these ultimately present as neurodegenerative disorders. In fact, peroxisomal association to Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease and multiple sclerosis, as well as cardiovascular diseases like the Barth syndrome and just straightforward CAD, coronary artery disease, have all been linked to peroxisomal disorders. So that would suggest that plasmalogen biosynthesis is linked to all of those very serious human diseases, starting off in infancy and going all the way to old age, such as in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, which often occur late onset, right? When people normally have been living 5 decades at least, right? Sometimes 6 or 7. So obviously there's a whole gambit of research in plasmalogen biosynthesis and turnover because it's directly linked to peroxisome. So this is where you get a good reason to call this authentic biochemistry, right? Of course, because you're learning now something that is fundamentally important in human biology and therefore in human biochemistry. And it's not something that's normally covered in a graduate or medical school biochemistry course. Not because it couldn't be, but because the people that often teach these courses don't have a very strong background or have no background in lipid biochemistry. And, you know, we hope to correct that. And, you know, I would be glad to help out. So, paper published in Oncology Letters. Let's take a look at this. Let me check my time. So we're going to be moving around in multiple publications now because there's a lot that we want to cover. This is going to be a pretty solid mosaic. I'm guessing it's going to be well over 13 lectures when we're finally done with it. But you never know, right? With me, you never know. Okay, now, thyroid cancer. What's the current treatment for thyroid cancer? Well, surgery, number one, but also radio and chemotherapy, right? But no matter, surgery, radiotherapy, or chemotherapy, recovery rates and recurrence rates, that is, are both really in the negative for thyroid cancer. So that would suggest that the treatments that are currently available are not particularly effective to be able to treat this very dangerous cancer. So this paper that was published in 2018 in Oncolet was looking at, you might guess, enzymes involved in peroxisomal biogenesis, because as it turns out, this is yet another disease that seems to be linked to plasmalogens, that is thyroid cancer. Okay. All right. Alkylglycerone phosphate synthase, AGPS. Inactivation decreases the expression of various types of tumor cell patholipidology, including, as it turns out, because of this enzyme, all the pathways linked to ether lipids, but not only the ether lipids, but the other phospholipids, and indeed even the eicosanoids generated from prostaglandin metabolism. That's why I wanted to make sure you had a good idea about prostaglandins and leukotrienes before I ever got into plasmalogens. You see? That's why, because now you have a background in cyclooxygenase and lipoxygenase pathway enzymes. Eicosanoids, PLA2 generator arachidonate, or eicosapentaenoid, or docosahexaenoid, oxygenation of those fatty acids. This is all linked. Okay? As it turns out, alteration of lipid metabolism in tumor cells is a current pharmacotherapeutic target because there's often a pathobiochemistry in lipid metabolism that has been described in many different tumor types. So it's no surprise it's found in thyroid cancer. Okay. Now, AGPS overexpression is able to increase the survival and migratory ability of the tumor cells. And we're not just talking about thyroid cancer, we're also talking about ovarian cancer, breast cancer, and melanoma, as well as prostate and primary breast cancer. So overexpression of AGPS is linked to all of this increase in severity of those cancers. So it looks like AGPS may be, all by itself, that one enzyme, a good target for not only as a biomarker diagnostic, but maybe for the treatment of those cancers and, yes, of thyroid cancer. We're going to get into that next lecture because we're already out of time. So next lecture, we're going to finish off this very small discussion of thyroid cancer. Then we're going to get back into plasmalogens in metabolism, and then we're going to dip in and out of that biosynthetic pathway and the regulation thereof and do a fair amount of clinical biochemistry. Okay, I promise. Dr. Dan Guerra with the fire cracking in the background on the very first day of March 2024, saying have fun listening to the music and bye for now.